CGM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CGM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CGM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CGM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
And welcome to Handy Link. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, Karen Ball will be telling us about the Sturge Weber Foundation. So what can you tell me about the foundation?
Well, it was incorporated in 1986. My daughter was born with Sturge Weber, and she had three eye surgeries in the first 3 months of her life. And once she was stabilized with that, then there was nothing at the time, so we went ahead and started a foundation, and mostly to really chase down, you know, what was the cause of it and to improve treatment options for those who were born with a birthmark on their face and Sturge Weber. And there's also a condition called Klippel-Trenaunay, which affects the limbs, hypertrophic limbs, that type of thing. But the main goal was really just to bring parents together so they could share their stories and gain a little empowerment and to leave the victimhood behind, because there's a lot of stigma with facial difference. And at that time, it was really difficult to remove the port wine stain in a timely manner. So that was the initial roots of it. It started in my unfinished basement and kind of went from there.
So in modern times, how do you go about reaching out to those affected who could potentially benefit from the empowerment you described?
Mm-hmm. You know, it over the years, it went from snail mail and long distance expensive calls. And then, of course, as the internet came along, you know, we got some emails, so that we do it through email, online social media platforms, blast emails. We have educational summits that we host periodically for different topic areas and with different medical experts, so people can, you know, ask specific questions.
So when it comes to Sturge Weber syndrome, is there ever a risk of misdiagnosis?
Rarely. Very good question, actually. Rarely. Because the hallmark of it is a birthmark that occurs in the V1, V2 distribution area, the forehead eye region. And so that's just key. And the other thing that makes it hard to misdiagnose, or not hard to misdiagnose, is that within the brain, there is a birthmark on the brain as well. And it creates a railroad track type of calcification that progresses over time. So it shows up very clearly on the scans. Mm-hmm.
So what sort of methods does the foundation use to help support those who are affected?
Very comprehensive, I would like to think. You know, we really strive to meet people where they are in their learning journey about the disease, on what the specific issues are in manifestations involved for their child or for themselves. We have over 2,000 adults now that have been diagnosed with it. So we usually start, we try to start with a phone call. You know, this day and age, it's a little tougher because people kind of want to hide behind the text and the email. I say hide, that's kind of stigmatory, isn't it? But because I'm a people person, and it's much easier to look into your eyes and see maybe what's not being said or feel what's being, you know, felt. So it's easier to have a more robust conversation that way. But we meet them where they are, and then we help find the closest expert for their care. We direct them to other online resources that may give them a leg up on what they're dealing with.
So, do you know offhand about how many people are affected by Sturge Weber?
You know, that has always been a challenge for us. We know over 1 million people have a port wine stain somewhere on their body. We estimate 20 to maybe 30,000 have Sturge Weber in the U.S.
So, in your time with the foundation, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
A successful moment or moments?
Yes.
Oh yeah, definitely. I was standing in my kitchen 10 years ago in May, and I got a phone call from who was then our chief scientific officer, and he told me they had found the gene. We had the challenge with Sturge Weber was it's not hereditary, so unlike other neurovascular diseases, tuberous sclerosis, neurofibromatosis, you can't have multiple family members with Sturge Weber, so it was much more of a challenge. And we had helped foster and support an application to the National Institutes of Health for a consortium grant with two other organizations. And because of that robust multi-million dollar funding, we were able to get tissue samples and find that the GNAQ gene mutation is what causes Sturge Weber. It's a it's left me out of the room. But it's an eye mutation. Mm-hmm.
So, what are the next steps forward in your work?
Well, we actually, it's another great question. We've been around 36 years now, and periodically over the course of our existence, I've brought in outside experts to take a look to see how well we are as an organization and staff and board. And so right now we're doing a multi-tier assessment and look back at where we've been and where we're going to go. That should finish up in January. And we're also putting together a succession plan because at some point I'd like to go have an umbrella drink on a beach and be able to just retire, but I don't think I'll ever walk away from it fully. But that's where we are now, is we're just laying out some more strategic goals and transition things so that we can responsibly take the energy that I've brought to this and the love of what I do and transition it to someone else who will have the dedication and compassion to really get more treatments. Again, you know, like with the laser treatment, it's been around over 30 years. They still cannot totally clear the birthmark. It just kills it one layer at a time, because all it is just excess layers of vessels. And so we are trying to engage those with the brightest minds to think of another way to treat that. You know, there's cosmetics that cover it. Sometimes people use it, sometimes they don't. It just depends on who they are and where they are in their journey.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure enough. Thank you so much for doing it. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. In this segment of our show, Jill Kazakoff will be telling us a little bit about Costello syndrome. So what can you tell me about your work with Costello syndrome?
So I am a volunteer member of the board of directors of an organization called the Costello Syndrome Family Network. That is a nonprofit that promotes early and accurate diagnosis of Costello syndrome while raising overall awareness of the syndrome and promoting research that benefits our families. So we work to connect families with each other and with doctors and to provide support in any way that we can. And it's run mostly by volunteers.
So for those who might not be as familiar, what are some of the typical impacts of the syndrome?
Costello syndrome is a genetic syndrome. It's very rare. The incidence is about 1 in 300,000, so a very small number of people. It causes neurocognitive delays and impaired learning. Many children with Costello syndrome struggle to walk, talk, and feed themselves. They often have feeding tubes. Infants with Costello syndrome are large at birth, but they tend not to grow very quickly because they have trouble eating, and a lot of them have reflux. They often have problems with their hearts. They are at an increased risk of cancer and of getting benign tumors as well. They actually have a 15% lifetime risk of developing cancer. And most people with Costello syndrome have skeletal and orthopedic issues. So sort of the main list of effects of Costello syndrome are heart defects, feeding issues. A lot of them have neurological issues like tethered spinal cords and Chiari malformations. They have vision issues, sleep disorders, seizures, cancer, tight heel cords, scoliosis, developmental delay, hip dysplasia, and hormonal deficiencies like growth hormone deficiency.
So, with the whole host of symptoms, and given how rare it is there ever a risk of misdiagnosis?
I think that's part of the function of the CSFN, is to sort of help raise awareness so that people are getting diagnosed. There are a lot of families with older individuals with Costello syndrome who were diagnosed quite late, and I think there are a lot of syndromes that can get mixed up with Costello syndrome just because most medical professionals that our families see have never heard of it or never seen anyone else with Costello syndrome. So I do think there is a lot of people who go undiagnosed or people who get wrong diagnoses.
So how do you folks go about reaching out to those who could potentially benefit from knowing there are supports and connecting with others who share their journey?
So a big thing that CSFN does is we hold biannual conferences in the United States. So every 2 years, we fundraise for and provide opportunities for our families to get together. There's also doctors at these conferences, so they're learning about Costello syndrome. And at the conferences, we do things like roundtables, where families get together and discuss different aspects of the syndrome. There are research studies available, question and answer sessions with medical professionals. We have activities that are fun for the families to do together, moms and dads nights out. There's a big dance on the last night, sip shops, and we try to pair the siblings together, and we help families get there by offering scholarships when we can. We also do things like social media posts. We have Costello Syndrome Awareness Day, on January 27th, we have t-shirts that families love to buy and they wear to raise awareness. We have a newsletter, a website, and we have a trifle brochure and a welcome guide that we distribute to as many families as we can.
So, in your time with the organization, has there been any success story that you've seen?
I think the biggest success story is the families. We often refer to it as our Costello Syndrome family. It seems like once the families are connected, you're a member of it right away. People get really, really close, and they sort of become the experts on their child's syndrome, and they're really able to help other people. And, you know, they raise awareness, and they build strong bonds, and I think that's really beneficial when you have a child or an adult in your family with something that is as rare as Costello syndrome.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need to keep pushing forward in advocacy and awareness, what would you say?
I think it's really important to remember that just because somebody has a syndrome that makes them look quite different and have special needs and do things in a different way, that they also have so many aspects of them that are just like everybody else. It's really important for people with Costello syndrome to be included at school and in community events. You do have to understand that sometimes they need a little bit of extra help, but it's so important to remember that both the community as a whole and individuals with special needs benefit from inclusivity and everybody getting out there and interacting and being included.
To that end, do you do any awareness work within schools?
I think parents, we are all constantly in the schools sort of doing awareness work for our young people with Costello syndrome. The vast majority of our children are in schools where they have never encountered another person with Costello syndrome. So we are working with our school teams. We are guiding them. We're kind of like the bridge between our school teams and the Costello community. So parents as a whole are constantly in the schools raising awareness for their kids. A lot of schools celebrate Costello Syndrome Awareness Day, and that's parents in there asking them to do that. A lot of parents make presentations to the schools about their children and their needs, and so that's, I think, a lot of the parents are doing that on their own.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this. But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Whether you're on the go or staying home, make CJAM the soundtrack to your day. Tune into 99.1 FM on your radio or visit cjam.ca to listen live or access past shows. You can also stream us right from iHeartRadio. Just visit iHeartRadio.ca or download the iHeartRadio app. And if you feel like it, connect with us on social media. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all at CJAM FM. Keep yourself close to the music. CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching higher ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit about Sturge-Weber syndrome from Karen Ball, and Jill Kazakoff told us a little bit about Costello syndrome. In this segment of our show, Dave Harshaw will be telling us about his cancer journey and returning to work with the Tetra Society.
That did happen, and when that happened, I would just tell myself, no, you can't go there, and you're just not doing that.
Recently coming out of a cancer journey, are you going to be getting back into the work of Tetra?
I'm already back in, yes. I'm already doing, I've got one project on the go and four more on hold. So, yes, I'm looking forward to being back to the way I was before my journey. So, it looks like everything is good, and yeah, we're going to be back to normal.
So, can you take me through a little bit of your cancer journey, the diagnosis, and some of the coping you had to go through?
Well, I had lymphoma, which kind of zaps all your energy, so you can't even... when I woke up, I couldn't even lift my head. And you start from there. You try lifting your head. Okay, my neck works. And then, oh, I wonder if I can lift my arms. And it was really that far down, like that bad, that I had to learn to do sit-ups. And then once I could do sit-ups, I could try and transfer to my chair, which I couldn't do for a long time. I will say that the therapists over at Hotel Du were fantastic. They were really good. And they were really quite helpful, and a lot of my friends that are around me are also helpful. You'd be surprised at who came out to help. A lot of people were pushing for me, and a lot of people were helping. So, luckily for me, that's what I got, and it worked out okay.
So, what sort of strategies did you use to keep your mind from going to the worst-case scenario, to keep yourself hopeful?
That did happen, and when that happened, I would just tell myself, no, you can't go there, and you're just not doing that. So, the therapy room was down the hall, so I went and stole weights from the therapy room, not literally, but stole weights from the therapy room and brought them to my room. And when I wasn't in therapy, I did therapy on my own in my own room. So instead of getting 1 hour of therapy, I got four. At least.
So,
which was quite a help, but getting better faster.
So, having gone through a cancer journey yourself, do you find that you were well prepared for it? I mean, it's one thing to hear about a given condition, but to experience it for yourself, did you find the realities of it were closely matching what people are generally told about cancers?
No. I went through a lot of surgeries as a kid. I did a lot of things because of my cerebral palsy. And that was way worse than anything you can even imagine. So you can say, yeah, I know. Oh, no, you don't. Not until you go through it. I guess the best thing I can say about it was the people around me were the most important, because they were the ones that kept your spirits up and helped you when you needed it, and it was a really good thing for them.
So, do you have any advice for anyone out there who might be struggling in their own journey, asking the question of, will I be able to make it through?
You can do anything that your mind wants you to do. It just depends how bad you want it. If you want to get through it, you'll certainly get through it. Life may change a little bit, but if you're willing to work for it, you'll definitely get it. I will say that.
So, you're in the remission stage now. Tell me a little bit about how that feels, having come through the complete journey.
It was the best news you could ever get. I got that news yesterday. So when the doctor told me that, I already knew because of what I went through, I already knew that because I didn't feel the way I had way I felt before. So if it ever comes back, I'll know long before it's hospital time what's going on, because you definitely have a different feeling when you're going through that. Well, for someone who doesn't know what that feels like, well, I do. So I already knew that I was going to be okay just by my strength and how I felt.
So in that sense, having the return to Tetra, do you think it'll give you a different perspective that you might do some more adaptations for those who are in a similar recovery journey?
Well, the first thing that happened with Tetra was when I got home, I didn't want to do anything. Like, nothing. I didn't want to do anything. None of it mattered. All that mattered was getting myself better And Derek and I have a really, really good coordinator, and she was quite helpful during my cancer time too. She was keeping my hopes up and keeping my thoughts with Petra. And then as I got stronger, it got a little bit easier to start thinking about all the things that I had to do. At one point, I didn't want to do anything at all. I was like, nope, I am done. But as you get better, you know, you just get better. So I found myself, even though in my own mind I was done, I was still doing my job in my mind. I still was thinking about what I had to do and why and how. And my coordinator was super.
So you mentioned you have some projects you're going to be resuming. Tell me a little about those.
Now I've got a mirror box that is used for an amputee. If you lose a limb, as I have, you use a mirror box to kind of trick your mind into thinking you still have a leg. Because they say that the phantom pain is the worst, and it is. Your body kind of buzzes, it goes, and then you can feel your whole leg. As if it's there. Like, enough that you can try and stand on it and it's not there. So, that's one project that we're working on. I'm hoping to help. I'm making a backup camera for a power cat, so that should you be going down the street, you can see a bicycle coming up on you, or a person, or a car, or whatever. I'm working on electronics. I've done a lot of home automations, so, and there's still more. There's lots of automation projects going on. So that's more or less what I'm focusing on right now. I'm focusing on the electronic part of it, as far as people and chairs that need it.
So, do you think that in your journey, and now getting back to the work of Tetra, that the idea that you'd be working on these projects helped keep your mind strong through all you went through?
Oh, yes. I will say it was hard to get my mind started to actually put my head around having to do all this stuff. But the funny thing is, like you say, once you've done it, I've been with Tetra now for 9 years. So, to get used to what you have to do. And it was nice to finally realize that, yeah, everything is normal, and I'm going to go and help some more people. Without that, I don't know what I would do. It's because I enjoy it so much. I really do.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Dave's journey isn't too dissimilar from what you might find commonly in the disability community, in so much as it's all about finding motivation, finding a reason to summon that strength to get through the most difficult of times. The fact is, a person with a disability who recognizes they have something to live for, they have a tomorrow waiting for them, will find strength more often than not. And such a person has to recognize that there are people who are counting on them. For Dave, it was all a matter of mind over matter. But for many of us, it comes down to just looking inside and asking, how can I plan for the future? What can I hope for in the days ahead? For many of us, this can be the big difference. You recognize you are loved and you are valued in the community, that you will go on to create or to advocate or just to live the fullest life possible, chances are you'll find meaning and strength to get through from day to day. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.